Coming up this hour, we're on day 694 without a state budget. What's happening? Also, we ask parents, what kind of support do you wish you had after bringing home a new baby?
I kind of needed that person to be able to say, yes, you're doing it right. I guess that encouraging or that reassurance.
We learn about a new nurse home visit program in Freeport, 30 miles west of Rockford, and a volunteer-led organization in Champaign-Urbana that offers new parents a helping hand. Also, there are many robots that can fly, but none that can fly like a bat until now.
We want to build a robot that can do more than just fly around in nice, clean, circular patterns or straight line patterns.
How this bat robot could change the future of drone technology. That's all ahead this hour on the 21st. The latest news is next. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Along with the joys of a new baby, we know that also comes with its own new set of challenges.
I remember being extremely sleep deprived. And also, I didn't know what to do. You're out of the hospital, they give you the baby, and here, take care of it, right? I remember being constantly worried.
I remember trying to bathe her and just being scared because she was so tiny and so slippery and just being exhausted. Exhausted. Because she wouldn't sleep by herself. She didn't want to be set down at all. So I just remember holding her all the time.
I kind of needed that person to be able to say, yes, you're doing it right, or that's okay, like, do it this way. Like, I guess that encouraging or that reassurance, but not having that person there, it kind of defeats your confidence a little.
Those are the voices of Zeynep Matic-Erdogan, Karita Shelby, and Rachel McCool, moms we caught up with at the Champaign Public Library earlier this week. Thanks to producer Christine Herman for that audio. Whether it is that confidence, encouragement, or even just practical help, today we're going to talk about several new programs in Illinois that are helping new moms and dads in their first weeks at home with a new child. If you're a parent, we'd love to hear from you. What kind of support do you wish you would have had during this time? We did get a Facebook comment from Cheryl who says, I wish I had more help after going through a C-section. It's hard to ask. I just wish people had offered. You can give us a call, 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. You can always tweet to 21st Show, our handle, 21ST Show. Let's start with a new pilot program that just launched in Freeport, Illinois. It's about 30 miles west of Rockford. It's called Illinois Family Connects. And among other things, it provides in-home visits for new parents and their babies. Joining us now is Rachel Garman. She's a Freeport mother who just gave birth to her first baby in March and was Illinois Family Connects' very first client. Hi, Rachel. Welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Hi.
And congratulations. Rachel? Sorry, it looks like we're having a hard time getting a hold of Rachel there. So what we are going to be talking about today is this new parent program. This is a program actually that was launched by our First Lady, Illinois' First Lady, Governor Rauner. Let's go to someone. I want to bring in Julia Munreese now. She's actually the Director of Family Services at Stevenson County Health Department, and she's been overseeing this Illinois Family Connects home visit program. Julia, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
While we get Rachel back on the line, I wonder if you could just tell me, what's the idea behind sending a nurse into the home of new parents in these first few weeks?
Well, I think it's to give a parent an opportunity to ask any question that they might have about their new baby. Even if you're a second or a third time mom, things change over time. And it's an opportunity to know what's best for my baby and what's best for my family and have the information so you can make those decisions.
And what makes these visits different from, say, a new mom or dad bringing their baby into the doctor?
Well, the difference is that the nurses who come to your home will be there for probably anywhere from an hour and a half to 2 hours on their first visit. So oftentimes when you go to the doctor's office, you'll go in and see the doctor and maybe see him for 10 or 15 minutes. And then on your way out to the car, you think to yourself, oh, I wish I would have asked about this, or I wish I would have asked about that. So in having a visit right there in your home for a two-hour window of time, it gives a parent time to think about things and be able to ask the questions that they would have in their normal daily routines.
And it looks like we have Rachel back on the line. Hey, Rachel, was that your experience as well with the program?
Yes, absolutely. My daughter had probably a month in between her doctor's visits, and this at-home program was amazing because I had a list of questions in between those visits that got answered.
Like, what kind of questions did you have?
Mostly, I was wondering if my daughter was gaining enough weight because I was having problems with breastfeeding. So at my home visit, I was able to have my daughter weighed, and she was measured as well, and I was able to see that she was gaining weight, so it was very reassuring for me.
Sure, yeah, that's always something that's lots of parents worry about in the beginning, right? And I wonder,
yes.
What made you decide to participate, Rachel, in this Illinois Family Connects program?
Well, I am a new mother, and I'm 22 years old, so I'm young. And my mother at the time wasn't living in the area, so I knew that I'd have questions and I would need help. So I thought that this would be a perfect program for me.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel like it made a difference personally for you to participate in this program?
Absolutely. It made me so much more confident as a mother, as a new mom.
Yeah. And what, I mean, and wonder, so, I mean, obviously the breastfeeding probably is always something that takes a little bit of getting used to. Did you feel like having someone in your house who was there that made it a little bit easier and maybe more intimate and kind of was
yes,
that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And what other things do you think the nurse was able to help you with that maybe you didn't even think of beforehand?
Well, I was having trouble with getting my daughter to calm down at night. She was getting really fussy, and it was difficult for me to figure out what would help her. And my nurse was able to give me a few different tricks to help with that, like swaddling and pacifier and putting in her swing and different
yeah.
things like that.
And do you feel like, I wonder, Rachel, do you feel like those are questions that you were able to ask other people, other new moms, or did the information feel better because it was also coming from a medical professional?
It felt so much better coming from a medical professional just because so many of my peers and family members have different, they have different ideas of what is right to do with your baby. So it was nice to hear, a valid answer to my questions.
Yeah. And how do you think have you talked to other moms? How have they reacted when you talked about your experience with this program?
They were really interested in it. They thought it was really cool that I was able to do that. All the mothers that I'm friends with have older kids now, but they wish they would have had something like that when they were new moms.
Well, Rachel, thanks so much. I really appreciate you joining us. I know you took some time out of your busy morning to talk to us, so I appreciate you sharing your story with us. Thanks for being with me.
Thank you.
Julia, can I ask, as Rachel was sharing all of that, you know, obviously Rachel's talking about her age and being a new mom and her mom not being nearby. What do you think, what are the issues that the nurses are kind of on the lookout for when they're doing these home visits?
Well, as you're doing the home visits, there's some probably wider categories of things that they're, you know, being on the lookout for or have general information about, like safe sleep, managing an infant who's crying a lot, what your plans are for child care. I know, for example, in Rachel's case, she was returning back to work, and so, you know, we were able to say, do you have plans for child care? Is that something you're comfortable with? And then if you know, she did not have that information, we could tell her what's available, what kind of questions she could ask when looking for a child care provider. Just so many different avenues of things to look at, including parent well-being, parent emotional support, safety in the community, as well as the infant's health.
That's Julia Monresis. She's the director of family services at Stevenson County Health Department. They're overseeing the new Illinois Family Connects home visit program that's in conjunction with FHN Memorial Hospital in Freeport. I want to bring someone else into this conversation as well. Karen O'Donnell is an associate professor in psychiatry and behavioral services. She's also assistant professor in pediatrics at Duke University. She developed the Durham Connects program, and that's after which this Illinois pilot program is being modeled. Hi, Karen. Thanks for joining us as well.
Hi.
So, I appreciate it. Can you explain, by the way, what went into you deciding to develop this program in North Carolina?
Well, first of all, it was a team of people. I didn't do it alone. A couple of really wonderful collaborators. But in 2002, our major funder sought us out at Duke to help improve child well-being at a community level. There are many home visit models that are very good and show strong evidence for baby and family. But the funders were after a public health approach that would be available to everyone, because everyone has needs with a newborn in the house. So from 2002, our team developed the program, piloted the program, and we are now at a point of disseminating the program to other states and counties. Illinois has been especially receptive. They're now in two areas, and I think the plan of the First Lady and ounce for prevention is to make it statewide. So hooray. I'm sure Rachel would agree.
I'm sure she would. Julia, how is this being funded, the Illinois Family Connects program?
It is backed by some federal and state funds, and we're working with the Governor's Office of Early Childhood Development and Illinois State Board of Education.
And I should point out, too, especially to our audience in Peoria, there's actually a pilot program that's going to be launching in June for moms in Peoria County also. Julia, when as you're listening to Karen talk about the ideas behind the program, I wonder from a health department perspective why you think it's important that you all are offering this.
Well, I think that, Karen hit it on the head. It is a public health model, and public health is always interested in looking at the total population. So, again, while there are home visiting programs that might look at risk populations, this is something that's offered to everyone.
Right. So there's no income level with this. This is offered to anyone who wants to sign up for this.
Correct. Anybody who's in our pilot project framework, yes, absolutely.
And how are you finding parents now, Julia? How have you reached out? Like, how did you find Rachel?
Well, we're finding parents very receptive, but we're also working with our partner, FHN Memorial Hospital, and we're going right to the hospital unit every day during the week to meet with new moms and offer the service.
Mm-hmm. So, Karen, when you were looking at this model, and I'm thinking in particular of what you did in North Carolina, and you're talking about this from a public health standpoint, is the idea to catch problems in early stages before they become emergencies? Is it more just to provide general support? It's kind of thinking about just preventative and wellness and healthcare from a public health perspective?
All of the above. Families have unique needs and also many of the same needs. It could be anything from needing to be hooked up to food stamps to figuring out where the highest quality child care is, as well as the nurses do a physical assessment of baby and mom for postpartum issues. So there are many things in common with each visit, but each mother's and family issues are addressed individually as well. So what you said was true. Both are true.
And Karen, how common is it, these programs? I know you launched this in North Carolina. Illinois is now about to start doing this. I feel like this is maybe a more common model in Europe, but is this a common thing to do in the U.S.?
It hasn't been, and we're hoping it will be. You're absolutely right. It's much more common in Europe. England, I guess, has the best paradigm for newborn home visits.
Right. I was going to say that's the one I'm most familiar with. Yeah, because I know the English
system. Germany has a great model. It extends well beyond ours. I wish we were able to do what they do.
What do they do in Germany? Yeah, what do they do in Germany?
Yeah, I Well, I'm going to make this up. It's actually 6 months to a year of home visits.
Wow. Okay.
Baby weight, support for mom. So it's an extended involvement, as well as the mothers have paid time off from work
Sure. For
a longer period of time. New Zealand also has a program, and I'm sure there are other countries that do. And I think in the U.S., we're discovering both the benefits for families and a financial benefit for health systems when the needs are addressed in the home at 3 weeks. Our biggest supports are from hospitals and primary care pediatrics because they know they can't do everything in 10 minutes. And we are very closely linked with those providers because they use us and we use them, and the family gets what they need that way.
Karen, how much savings? You said there's a financial savings. What have you seen in North Carolina?
In our site in Durham, North Carolina, we did an evaluation just of the frequency of families using the emergency department or having emergency overnight visits in the hospital. It was greatly reduced in our first randomized controlled trial, and we figure each dollar spent saved $3 of medical care.
Wow.
Because
okay.
Families learn to call their doctor or, you know, learn not to run to the emergency room. There are many other benefits that have been demonstrated, but that's the financial one that health systems want to hear about.
A very clear one. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation. We're talking about some new pilot programs launching in Illinois for new parents. As always, you're welcome to weigh in. Give us a call, 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet to 21st Show as we're talking about support for new parents here on the 21st. Stay tuned.
The 21st is made possible by the Friends of WILL and by the Library at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, generating new knowledge and developing and evaluating new technologies and methodologies to better distribute scholarly knowledge. The University Library at Illinois.
Thanks for tuning in to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Right now, we're talking about Illinois Family Connects. It's a pilot program that's just launched in the Rockford area, in Freeport, actually. And we're talking about, it's based on a model that was started in North Carolina. My guests are Julia Monrisa. She's the Director of Family Services at Stevenson County Health Department. She's been overseeing the Illinois Family Connects program we were talking about. Karen O'Donnell's also on the line with us from North Carolina. She helped develop the Durham Connects integrated home visit program that this one is based on. These are new government-funded programs. And, you know, Julia, we were just hearing Karen talk about sort of this model, how it's sort of maybe something that's being used more in other countries, now being used here. And I wanted to ask you, how is this system being integrated? How is a nurse home visit to a new mom tying in with sort of the standard well baby checkups, postpartum visits for the mother? How does it all come together?
Well, our initial visit is scheduled about 3 weeks out from after they leave the hospital. So that gives a mom time to get home. And many times when they first come home, they've got extra support in the home helping them. Maybe a grandmother or a husband might be home for a few days off of work and just have extra assistance. So we find that about 3 weeks is about the time where people start to get back to normal routines, and the mom might find herself at home alone with the baby and discover that she might have more questions than she realized that she had before. So it seems like it's a nice time to stop in the home. We also do offer, if they're having problems with breastfeeding when they leave the hospital, that they can call if they have problems and need us to come sooner.
And also, I'm thinking about 3 weeks in and thinking about the fact that I think the numbers are 1 in 7 women have postpartum depression. Is that something that normally manifests itself right away, or is it something that also maybe takes around that 3 week, 1 month mark?
Well, I think that, you know, immediately after birth, we recognize that there is that emotional letdown that we always or sometimes call baby blues. And so there is a very distinct difference between what's considered baby blues and postpartum depression. And so, yes, coming at that 3 week mark gives you a better time to look at the mom and get a better gauge and make sure that it's not just the emotions of just having the baby that are the baby blues, and that it might be something more serious when we do the screen.
And Karen, what other kinds of things are in this program nurses designed to look out for? Not just, you know, we've been talking about breastfeeding or depression, but there are lots of practical, I think, maybe, I wonder, other advice offered for moms to help bond with their children, reading, or safe sleep practices. What kind of thing, mm-hmm. other things are nurses equipped to talk about?
Well, first of all, it's a good thing it's nurses. Mothers really welcome that health professional into their home. But the protocol, it's a standardized protocol, and the nurses touch base with everything on the agenda, which I can talk about in a minute. But the important thing is they do it in a family-friendly way. So the question might be, how are things going? But that the answers may address health care, emotional well-being, the kind of support the mother's getting, and that kind of thing. So although it's an informal and family-friendly visit, there are topics that are routinely touched upon that include health care, health needs, child care, sleep, crying, material needs. Does the family have what they need to thrive? And then emotional support. Are there risk factors in the home like substance abuse? But also, who's helping this mom take care of this baby? And while she's taking care of the baby, who's taking care of her? So we think of it in terms of several factors that seem most universal for moms and dads and grandmothers and babies at that 3 week mark.
Julia, as Karen's been talking about, this was a program that's eligible. It's eligible for anyone can do this. It's not just targeting at-risk families. I wonder, what difference does it make for Stevenson County in particular to be able to launch this program?
Well, it's something that as a community, I think we were ready for. We have a long history of collaboration and working well together, and support across social service agencies, the health networks, and the health department. So it just seemed like the right time to be able to step into this role and extend what we're offering and what we can do to support all the families in our community.
What advice do you have for other public health departments around the state who might be thinking about this?
I think that it is something very wonderful to look at, and it probably goes back to the days when in the 50s and 60s when a county nurse might come to your home to offer giving your child immunizations and check on you and see how things are going. So it's almost as if we're going back to what we had known before. I do think it's a wonderful thing to be able to offer, and it has its benefits that we can see throughout the community.
That's Julia Monresis. She's the Director of Family Services at Stevenson County Health Department and overseeing this Illinois Family Connects program in conjunction with FHN Memorial Hospital. Julia, thanks for being with me.
Thank you so much.
Karen, I want to thank you as well. And it's Karen O'Donnell, an associate professor in psychiatry and behavioral services. She's also an assistant professor in pediatrics at Duke University, where she helped develop this Durham Connects program. Thanks for being with us as well, Karen.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And for everyone who's listening, I'd like to point out that this program is going to be launching in Peoria as well in June for all moms who reside in Peoria County. So we'll have more information about that actually at our website at 21stshow.org. You know, as we've been talking about the challenges that new parents face and how hospitals and medical providers are trying to help, we wanted to go now to Champaign-Urbana and a new organization that's about providing all that other day-to-day support for parents. It's called Sistering WCU. And I'm joined now by the group's co-founders, Aaron Murphy and Dory Geisler. Aaron, Dory, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with me.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Aaron, you know, as you were just listening to this pilot program that you were hearing about, sending nurses into homes to visit, can you tell us a little bit about your organization? Because you're sending trained volunteers to help with maybe more practical aspects of adjusting to motherhood. What kind of things are you guys doing?
Right. We're sending people who have volunteered in our community to go to the homes of families who've just had a baby to just help out with a basic menu of things such as, you know, doing light dishes, playing with the older children, holding the baby so the mom can take a shower or take a nap. You know, whatever she needs to do to feel human again and give her a little bit of sanity.
Yeah, Dory. Yeah, why did you guys create this organization? Where did this come from?
Well, this came from kind of both our postpartum experiences. You know, I went into this is kind of based off my oldest child, who's just about to turn 14. So 14 years ago, you know, I feel like a lot of mothers, I probably got a lot of education, if you will, about the birth experience, but very little about what to expect postpartum. And I think I kind of naively went into it thinking I was just going to pop this baby out and put him in a sling and go about life as usual.
Yeah.
But
how did that turn out?
Yeah, not very well. right. And, you know, it soon became apparent that I was completely unprepared. You know, I had a very complicated labor. I actually had a postpartum hemorrhage. I fell in the hospital. I hit my head. I got a concussion. So physically, you know, I was not in a good place. Combine that with sleep deprivation, you know, isolation, and really kind of struggling with this transition to motherhood, the kind of identity crisis that goes with from being an independent person, kind of in control, to being responsible for a baby who's totally dependent on you. So, you know, I didn't go very well. I ended up with undiagnosed postpartum depression. And really wanted to start something like this to kind of help mothers deal with that transition time and really promote like education about what to expect, so you don't go into it thinking that, you know, life is just going to keep going with this little infant alongside of you.
That's Dory Geisler. She's the co-founder of Sistering CU. We're talking to her and Aaron Murphy about this organization, this volunteer organization they've founded. You know, we were talking to moms. We've been talking to moms all week, and I wanted to play another piece from Rachel McCool of Urbana saying where she was at when she had a baby. Let's hear what Rachel had to say.
We had offers from friends to like come over and help us, and I don't think we took advantage of it because I didn't want people to come over just to take out the trash. You know, I wasn't up for visiting them. I wouldn't want people to come over just to do my dishes.
Aaron, is that a common sentiment you think that moms in particular have, where people are offering help, but then they just don't really, there gets to be a little disconnect between like, I want to help, but I don't know how to ask for help.
I think it's twofold. I think mothers are, and women in general, we have this expectation that we're the caretakers. We're responsible for taking care of things. And to have somebody come take care of us is an awkward position to be in. We're not used to taking help. So there is that. If you do get help, you're offered help. I was offered a lot of help in my postpartum experience, but it is uncomfortable to have somebody come to your home and do your dishes or take out your trash. But so we want to change that expectation for moms that it's okay to take help and to ask for help. But then also there's other people who are, you know, maybe don't have that safety net or a support network to even have somebody offer it in the first place. So we want to be there for the people who maybe are transient, you know, moving from all over with the university in our town, or just don't have that safety net, to be able to ask for help from us. And if you are offered help, you know, we want to make moms feel comfortable to take it.
Yeah. Dory, how do you guys do that?
How do we do that? Well, what we do is we begin by training our volunteers. And one of the things actually we do in our training is teaching them to kind of think about what it's like to be in a position to ask for help. And our volunteers do two training sessions. And then when they get matched with a family, so families and volunteers can both apply for the program to volunteer or get assistance via our website at sisteringcu.org. And then we will match a volunteer with a family that has similar needs. So it depends on whether or not the family wants care of the the other children in the home, or if they really just want companionship or household duties, and whatever the volunteer is most interested in providing, we try and match them with a volunteer.
And how many volunteers do you have right now?
Right now we have, I believe, 8 volunteers trained up, and a few serving right now, and a few about to be serving families that have due dates in the summer.
And what kind of training do you do for the volunteers?
We train them in just kind of really thinking about how to nurture mothers. That's one of the reasons that we're here. And so, you know, our culture really kind of has a baby first, after birth approach, and we're trying to flip that and kind of look more at nurturing the mothers. And so some of the families that we've been serving thus far, you know, they really want companionship. We also train our volunteers on what to expect about infant crying, SIDS recommendations, general baby care, sibling care, and also screening for postpartum depression.
You know, as you mentioned sort of changing culture, I wanted to play another piece of audio from Zeynep Matic Erdogan, a Champaign resident. She was talking about the differences she saw in support for new parents in the U.S. versus her home country.
I'm from Turkey, and there, you know, it's kind of the norm that, you know, grandparents help with the baby as long as they can. Luckily, I had my parents with me at the time, and I appreciated a lot because it was obvious that we needed that extra help.
Again, that's Zeynep Matic Erdogan, a Champaign resident, sharing how little bit of a cultural difference is. And Aaron, I wonder how much, you know, you think as you have looked at the way other cultures sort of handle this and the helping part of it and expectations of moms, where do you think we're at in the U.S. and here in Illinois? Where would you like to see us?
I think the U.S. is unfortunately at the bottom of helping take care of moms, and I think the rise in the maternal mortality rate is kind of an indicator of that. But I would say within the United States, Illinois has been at the forefront of trying to address some of these issues, like, for example, screening. It was the first state to mandate a screening for postpartum depression at the 6-week checkup. And like the pilot program you were just talking about, seems there's a lot of support in Illinois for that kind of thing. So fortunately, we live in Illinois, and people are supportive of trying to get more care for mothers. But absolutely more needs to be done.
I wonder, Dori, what do you want others who aren't new parents to know about this? What can people who are listening who maybe haven't had a baby or want to help out, how should they be looking at this?
That's a good question that I probably haven't thought about. I guess really what one of our missions is to kind of teach the culture, provide community education, and kind of foster a culture of postpartum care. So, you know, our country doesn't really have a recognized postpartum care period. You know, you see headlines like get your pre-baby body back, you know, in 3 months, that type of thing. And what we're really trying to, you know, really get information out there and say, you know, this is a transition period, and it's a period where moms need care. And, you know, just because other people have gone before us and done it without help doesn't mean it has to be that way, that it could be easier with some help.
Yeah. Aaron, any other final advice you want to add?
We're just wanting to be there as that extra pair of hands, the listening ears for families. And if we could get more champions on board for postpartum care, like grandmothers, grandfathers, friends and family, and help moms become more comfortable with taking that help, I think we would see a real shift and maybe a reduced rate of postpartum depression that comes from isolation and just those extra stressors.
That said, you guys are still, I imagine, looking for more volunteers to sign up to help with Sistering CU?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I don't imagine there'll ever be a shortage of families, but we can't serve families without the volunteers.
Exactly.
They need to come first.
So I want to thank Dori Geisler and Aaron Murphy, both of them co-founders of Sistering CU. We'll have all of the information about Sistering CU at our website. By the way, I know you guys have an event this evening. You're screening a documentary about postpartum depression, right? It's called Dark Side of the Moon. That's going to be, is that this evening?
This is the 30th at the Champaign Public Library.
On the 30th. Sorry about that. Okay. We tweeted out that information as well if you follow 21ST Show. Erin, Dory, thanks so much for being with me.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much for having us, Nyla. Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Illinois is now on day 694 without a budget, and it's less than a week before the legislative session in Springfield is scheduled to end. This is the longest period any state has gone without a budget in modern history. To talk about where we're at and what's next, we're joined by Monique Garcia. She's the State House Bureau Chief for the Chicago Tribune. She's in Springfield. Hey, Monique, welcome back to the 21st.
Thank you for having me.
Monique, earlier this week, Democrats in the Senate approved a budget bill with only Democratic support. And I wanted to play something. Last night's Senate, Democratic Senate President John Cullerton was interviewed on CLTV. Here's what he had to say.
The budget that we passed is a balanced budget, and it's basically the governor's introduced budget. So we took his spending levels when he introduced his budget back in January, and we hit that number exactly. And then the Republicans told us in our negotiations that they would not have the income tax go more than a certain amount, and we hit that number as well. And then we just filled in the parameters that they gave us. So it's really the governor's budget with input from the Republicans, with their tax rate and their tax increase. We passed the governor's budget for them. The only thing we didn't have were Republican votes.
Monique, is that accurate? Is this what Republicans want in their budget?
Well, Republicans will say that that's not entirely true. So, indeed, Democrats in the Senate did negotiate major portions of this budget with Republicans. That was when there was still a hope of this so-called grand bargain that everybody could get behind. That is the governor's number, that $37.3 billion figure. But he has said all along that he would not support raising the income tax to bring in that level of revenue without also giving taxpayers relief in the form of a property tax freeze, and that is simply not in this plan. And there are also questions about whether or not this is indeed a balanced budget. The plan passed by the Senate relies on assumed savings from some legislation that has not yet passed both chambers and would in fact be dubious if there was a court challenge, and that of course is dealing with the state employee pension system. The plan, the budget that the Senate passed includes $1 billion in savings from something that is not yet law, and previous efforts to kind of change retirement benefits for employees have been ruled illegal by the Illinois Supreme Court.
So this sounds a bit, obviously, as it's never what it seems, right? And I wonder, given what you've said, particularly about the property taxes, where does this Senate bill go? Because are we going to the House? Are we going to Speaker Madigan?
Well, that indeed is the multi-billion dollar question here. So the budget plan did come over to the Senate. The Speaker issued a statement shortly after that saying, we will look at it, we will give it its due, but it was rather non-committal. So we've been talking to some of the House budgeteers, and they have been raising concerns. Yesterday, Representative Greg Harris from Chicago, who is Madigan's point person, brought up the pension issue. He also brought up concerns about the exact level of taxes and how much money that would actually bring in. And he noted that this bill, as passed by the Senate, would be retroactive, which means that there'd be a bigger chunk taken out of your paycheck. And that's kind of a hard thing for a lot of lawmakers to support, because it sounds like you're raising taxes up to 4.95, but it's actually much higher, almost as much as 6% when you kind of prorate what comes out of your bill. So the House says they're looking at it. We expect that there's going to be some hearings on Sunday to kind of get into the nitty-gritty of this. But I would be shocked if there were not major changes to this plan, or if the House simply decided to kind of do their own version of this, which they have been known to do.
And so would you say now the main sticking issue is property taxes, or is it the pension situation?
From the governor's perspective, it's property taxes. He simply says that, you know, I know that we need to raise the income tax to help us dig out of this, but I don't think it's fair to ask taxpayers to pay more if they're not going to get relief somewhere else. Democrats say that he's conflating several issues. This is their argument against his agenda from the get-go. They think that we should just craft a budget. We need to focus on the numbers. And they say that a property tax freeze is a political argument, that it polls well for a governor who's seeking re-election, but that ultimately it could wreak havoc on some of these local communities who fund their police and fire stations or fund their local schools out of that pot of money. So, you know, it's very likely that Democrats could decide to set that property tax issue aside completely, simply look at how to make the books balance and send something to the governor that he decides to veto. I mean, it's kind of, you're at a speculation point of what the governor would do depending on what Democrats decide to send him, if they send him anything. Last year, it looked like there was a train on track, and both chambers couldn't agree to actually get a plan in front of the governor to act. So we were into June before everybody decided to do that six-month budget that got us through the end of the year.
And is that, you think, of a likely scenario this time around as well? You did mention lawmakers are working through the weekend, do you think?
They are going to be working through the weekend. They'll probably go home Friday afternoon, maybe go to some barbecues and shake some hands over the holiday weekend on Saturday. But they're supposed to be back Sunday to kind of start drafting this. And I'd note that, you know, May 31st is more of a political deadline, because after that it becomes more difficult to pass these things. So the vote threshold goes up. And so you need more people in agreement if you want anything to become law. So if there is an agreement.
Yeah, it looks like May 31st is that deadline. Thanks so much, Monique. I'm afraid we're out of time, but that's a helpful summation of where we're at. Monique Garcia, State House Bureau reporter with the Chicago Tribune. Thanks, Monique.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. It's one thing to have a robot that flies. It's another thing entirely to design a robot that mimics the complex flight patterns of a bat. But that's what a team of Illinois researchers have done. They've created it. There's a study that's out now in the journal Science Robotics. And we're joined now by one of the folks who worked on this. Seth Hutchinson teaches in electrical and computer engineering at the University of Illinois. Seth, thanks for being here.
You're welcome. It's nice to be here.
So before we get into what this robot actually does, can you describe what it looks like? It actually looks like a bat.
It looks very much like a bat. The shape is very much like a bat. The color is not like a bat. The membrane,
clear, right?
The membrane on the wing is a clear silicon gel, and we haven't bothered to tint it. We probably should. The videos would be more impressive if we tinted it with a nice black color, but at the moment it's transparent.
And I imagine that there's a lot of complex robotics that goes into creating, replicating a bat in robotic form. Why did you guys decide to do a bat?
Well, the main reason, I think the main reason is real bats, biological bats, have incredible agility in the air. There aren't any other creatures that can fly and execute the kind of maneuvers that bats can. And so we were really inspired by that. We want to build a robot that can do more than just fly around in nice, clean, circular patterns or straight line patterns.
Right. And I think everyone at this point, lots of people have seen how drones fly. They kind of go up and down and around. This bat robot, do you just call it a bat robot?
We call it a bat robot.
The bat. How did you all, I know there's a whole team of people who worked on this. How did you come up with understanding and being able to imitate and replicate the kind of movement with robotics that real bats do in real life?
Well, one of the keys to our success has been working very closely with some biologists. So we have two colleagues at Brown University called Kenny Breuer and Sharon Schwartz, and they study biological bats. We spent a lot of time at the beginning of this project reading their papers, talking with them, and most importantly, I think, taking their data from real bat flight and trying to extract from that data the relevant aspects that could guide us in our design of a robot.
And so real biological bats have 40 joints. The bat bot only uses 9 joints. Why did you all decide to, was it easier to, well, you were trying to do it with as few joints as possible? I imagine that just makes it a simpler design.
Right. So every time you have a joint in a robot that moves actively, it implies there has to be a motor that's moving that joint. And every time you add a motor to a bat robot, you make it heavier. So for us, limiting the weight of the robot was really a key factor. You can't have a 10-pound bat robot flying around in the air. We were shooting for 100 grams, and that really limits how many motors you can put in. And that means the trick is to figure out what is the essential shape of the robot, what are the essential geometric characteristics of the robot that you need, and how can we implement those with as few as possible motors.
And what kind of material did you use? I guess you needed to use as lightweight a material as possible for everything?
We do. For the membrane for the wing, it's a silicone gel that some clever students from our material science engineering department created. For the skeleton, it's a carbon fiber structure. And then the other things are just off-the-shelf kind of components, very small motors, gears that are made here in the machine shop out of, I don't remember what, some sort of aluminum or something.
I was going to say, our very helpful producers are telling me that the membrane for the wing, the material is so thin, it's 56 microns thick, which is about the thickness of a hair. And I imagine that that also helps with power efficiency as well.
It does. The more weight, the more power. But the other cool thing about both biological bats and our bat is the fact that the flexible wing on the downstroke during flight, it deforms and it fills up with air. And at the bottom of the downstroke, it springs back and pushes the air out and acts like a big power amplifier. So you get some extra power efficiency from this. In the same way that if you put springs in a running robot, every time the spring compresses, it can then push away when you take the next step.
So I understand that creating a flying robot that does all of these things we've just been talking about is considered a holy grail for aerial robotics. Why is that?
I'm not sure I myself have ever used the phrase
you haven't
holy,
used
grail
holy grail
for robotics. It's a holy grail for robotics in the sense that I suppose in the sense that the agility and the aggressive maneuvering capabilities are unparalleled. Everybody would like their drones to be able to fly in all kinds of clever patterns, but not many can achieve that, especially the helicopter-based drones. The kinds of maneuvers they can execute are limited by the fact that all the propellers face in the same direction. And so to change the direction of the drone, you have to change the orientation of the drone, and that makes the aerodynamics a bit complicated.
And so is the sense that this would, the primary initial application might be for drones, or would you have a sense that this could be used for other things as well?
So the word drone itself has a lot of connotations, some of which are quite nasty. We don't imagine, for example, that our bat's going to carry weapons or do spy work. We do imagine that it could do things like surveil a construction site and help workers not be in the path of crane payloads, for example. Too many people die on construction sites. So our original motivation was make construction sites safer by having aerial vehicles that can surveil and inform.
And do you have a sense that with the materials you used, is this something that in terms of being a commercial product, this is something that could be viable because of how, I don't know how expensive this was, this initial one to create?
So, I mean, to create the initial one was, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, but an awful lot of that went into engineer time, machine shop time, and trial and error. I think at the moment, the prototype that we have costs a couple of $1,000s to build, so it's not super expensive. It would be a lot less expensive if we could buy our tiny little motors, you know, by the hundreds instead of three or four at a time. I think it's probably feasible as a consumer product in the sense that we could get a price point down to a few hundreds of dollars instead of a few thousands of dollars. But I don't know that consumers are anxious to buy robot bats. We'll have to see about
the
demand.
Well, it's pretty cool. I will tweet out the video of it. It's beautiful, actually, to watch it fly. Well, for you guys, what are the next steps for you all?
So we've spent a lot of time thinking hard and developing theory, and we've spent a lot of time designing and building. And now we have a system, a real system that flies. But what we haven't yet succeeded to do is take all the beautiful mathematics that we've thought about in the last 3 years and cram that into this robot's brain to see what it can really do. So I think we have a period ahead of us of testing out our theories to see how they work when they meet the actual robot.
Right, because we've been actually talking about the mechanics of it rather than the processing of the robot's ability. That's a whole other thing we haven't discussed.
It is. And that's the part, obviously, well, maybe not obvious, but if you're an engineering professor, it's the beautiful mathematics that draw you in at the beginning. And then it's building the physical device that slows you down when you want to do the cool things. Luckily, we have a great postdoc called Alireza Ramazani, who's a wizard at building things and also brilliant with mathematics.
So for you, the next steps are trying to figure out, now that you've got this, really figure out the capabilities of what it can actually do.
We have some pretty good ideas about the capabilities. We'd like to demonstrate them. And in the process, almost always in engineering applications like this, you refine your mathematical models, you refine your approaches as you test them on the actual device.
That's Seth Hutchinson. He's a professor in electrical and computer engineering at the University of Illinois, telling us about the Bat robot that was created partially here. Seth, thanks for being with me.
You're welcome. It's been fun.
That's all the time we have for today. You can always find past shows on the NPR One app. Search for The 21st. We're also available on iTunes and Android. If you have Alexa, we're easy to find, especially if you have NPR One enabled. Tell her, ask NPR One to play The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media, broadcasting today from the Medill Newsroom in downtown Chicago. Thanks for listening.